Oral History of Frances Sunny Ramsey. It's being conducted by Lana Tibbetts at the Heritage in Bethlehem. And today's date is 8/4/01. So Sunny, if you'd like to just kind of maybe introduce yourself and just tell us just a little bit about you and your when you lived in Bethlehem. And
I grew up in Bethlehem, and I'm in the class of 35, and I try to get back as often as I can. Lately, I've been doing it about once a year, but there were many years when I didn't get back. But, I remember during the period I grew up, that I remember I lived in town. And when I was about probably 9 years old, my grandparents moved to Bethlehem Hollow. And so I spent the rest of my time in Bethlehem Hollow. It was all right living there, but some of my memories are not the same as boys who grew up right in town. Because it was 2.5 miles.
Now, did you have to walk to school?
No, we had a bus.
Okay.
Bernard Roby was the driver, and he was a good driver. He would wait for us if we were a little late getting out of bed, and if we forgot something and had to run back in the house.
Now, that didn't often happen, did it?
Well, not with me, but some of the girls, of course.
Of course.
I got the hair ribbon or something like that. It was a I guess looking back on it, it was a horrible time, but yet it was a good time.
Right.
In those days, when I lived in Hollow, the tourist business was in the doldrums here, and it was after the Depression, the Great Depression, you know.
Right.
And so many of the hotels were no more than boarding houses. But in the very early time, when I lived in town, I can remember coming downtown, and at some time in the summer, maybe about this time, and possibly even earlier, I'd go by the Sinclair Hotel, and I would see women sitting there rocking that I remembered from the year before. And because I was a little cute boy, I would talk with them and they would talk back, you know. And it made sort of friendships with them, you know.
Right. Now, when you lived in Bethlehem, where exactly did you live?
When I lived in the
in town.
In the
village.
In the village. I started to see in the city. In the village, I lived on Agassiz Street.
Yeah.
And I lived just south of Cross Street, I believe it's Cross Street, the first Cross Street.
Yeah.
And it's on the right-hand side. The house is still there.
The big brown one.
I think, no, it's I really can't tell you what the shade is. It's a light shade.
Okay.
The house has been changed a good deal.
Right.
When we lived there, it was an old house. Now it's been changed and looks a little bit more modern now.
Right.
But anyway,
oh, how nice.
It was good. When I was real small, and my grandparents were responsible for me.
Okay.
My mother had died at my birth, and my father was in Boston or in Concord, New Hampshire. And my grandparents brought me up. Poor souls, kindly people, no money. And, well, anyway.
But full of memories.
Oh, yes. They were probably in their late 50s when I was dropped on their lap. I never heard a word about it. Never.
Isn't that wonderful?
And, no.
Now, were you an only, are you an only child?
Yes. My father remarried many years later and had two more children. but I never lived there.
No.
But anyway, my grandfather was a would-be farmer and had originally lived in Cherry Valley.
Oh.
And, but as everyone knows, running a farm in this part of New Hampshire is a tough business.
Right.
You can raise a good crop of rocks every winter, but, and hay, but the rest of it. Anyway, he wanted to get out where he had the land again, you know. So we moved up in Hollow then. I might have been maybe 10 when we moved down there, 9 or 10, I really don't know.
Right.
And we lived just across the River Road, on the Whitefield Road.
Oh, yes.
And, I've forgotten some of the names of the people that lived down there, but they were all nice people. Wilsons, they worked at the power plant. My uncle, Richard Burt, lived down there. He worked at the power station. And we had good times. I learned to swim in the Amanoosuc River.
You know,
during the summer, of course. And to find a puddle in the middle of the river big enough to jump across, you know, they're quite sure. And so I learned to swim. I was always so angry later on when I met children who grew up in the city. And I'd say, those poor kids, they never had a chance to swim and all that sort of stuff. And if we were near water and I watched them swim, they could really swim because they learned to swim in the Y, you know, the teacher.
Right.
All I had for instruction was
a paddle walk.
Yeah. It in over your head. That was kind of
good. When you lived up in Agassiz, did you ever do any sledding?
Oh, yes.
Did you slide right down Agassiz across
Main
Street?
No, I didn't. Oh, no, I was too small for that.
Okay.
No. When I really got into the sledding business, we did it on Maplewood Hill.
Oh.
And that was really good. Because we could go all the way to the river, all up where the bridge is now.
Yeah.
Well, the bridge was there, that was a different bridge. Anyway, good. We had one of the men who lived there, Mr. Wilson, maybe, but maybe was Sidney Straw. But anyway, whoever it was, had a traverse sled, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd pull that thing up as far as we could. People would love to ride down, but they hated to pull that thing back up. They always said, oh, we got to go home right now, you know, and all that sort of thing. But we'd have fun. We'd slide there. And then somebody, I can remember that during those years, we'd have so much snow. And towards spring, it would all crushed over, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd go right across fences. Snow would cover the fence completely. We had a great time. I remember one time, I wish I could tell you the year, we had a terrific blizzard. And it was so bad that the roads closed. Some of the roads, they pulled out an old roller.
Yes.
And did some of the roads with the roller. But the Whitefield Road was blocked. Could get through. In the vicinity of, they're both gone now, but in the vicinity of the Hazen farms, mm-hmm. there were two Hazens,
yeah.
lived there, brothers. One had a dairy farm and the other had a truck farm. And some of the alumnus came from those farms. But anyway, in the areas there, in their properties, we walked right up. It was so bad, they even encouraged high school children. I'm sure they said they had to be a certain age. But anyway, we were hired to go out there and work, but we were not allowed to work all day. We would only work for maybe 2 or 3 hours probably. And we'd have to cut blocks and then get the blocks out of the way.
Oh,
that was good. And the men hated to have us out there because I don't remember what we were paid. But they had to stay out there all day and work. And of course, we were children. We were having a lot of fun.
I would say you had an incredible amount of energy, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably not always directed the right way. Oh, we had great times. I think of some of the things we used to do that were the Halloween, you've probably heard them all before, the Halloween stuff, you know, and the townhouses, of course, always got tipped over, and they took a, I've forgotten the name of the instigator, but they had a small buggy, maybe a pony buggy, and took it up to Belfry. And that was great.
Oh my
great,
gosh.
Great fun. When I first went to school, Mrs. Harrigan was my first grade teacher. Her husband was the manager of the Upland Terrace.
Oh.
And I was in her room for 2 years, first and second grade. That was my first love.
Oh.
Oh, I loved that woman.
Did you ever confess to her?
I don't think so.
No.
But I'm sure she knew, because everybody in the class probably loved her too.
Right.
Yeah, it's great that some of the other teachers. I probably during my 2 years with her, first and second grade, probably was the only time I was devoted to school. After that, I was not a good student.
That just proves the power of a good teacher.
Absolutely. Yes. And I guess it's coming out. I have two children that are teachers now. One is a professor at the UNH now, and my daughter, my only daughter, is a teacher in the Gary Schools District here in New Hampshire. And she says, Dad, at one time she had a class, and as a matter of fact, we have one in this school. The toilets were at the end of the room.
Yes.
Because they couldn't let them out in the hall. The older boys and drugs and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And the children would get out in the hall and they wouldn't come back and all that sort of stuff. So she said to me one time, I said, Dad, you didn't think you raised your daughter to be a restroom monitor, but that's what I have to do in the back of the room. They don't come out of there, I go back in the room. I have to take care of things.
Now, have you been up to the school?
Yes,
and
I was there last night.
Did you do the tour at all?
Oh,
or
yes.
Does it look very different?
Oh, yes. It's because, the new part has been added.
Right.
It's interesting to me that the old school, of course, was a wooden school, and my grandfather, maybe in frustration because I wasn't studying, and of course he never went to school, I'm sure he didn't go to school. And but anyway, he was vitally interested in the school system. And he was somewhat of a nudge at meetings because he'd stand up and vote for things or advocate things that perhaps weren't in favor at that time with a lot of people. They talked about building a new school and anyway, at 2 or 3 meters, he really was out of favor with a lot of his friends because of his agitation about getting that school. The thing caught fire, the old school. And I forgot the details of it, but anyway, his friends always said, Lanny, you set that fire, damn you, just so you'd get a new school. That's not true.
That's not true. I was just saying, hopefully he denied that.
I don't think
that
they
were close by. So then when the old school burned, where did you go to school until the new one was built?
So when we moved to the hollow, where there was one new schoolhouse down there.
Oh, okay.
That was a big deal. We lived very close to the school. So going back and forth, no problem as well. That was a great time.
Now, was that just elementary school? And then you had
through sixth grade, maybe,
okay.
Something like that. I forgot exactly. But then you all had to go to chores, you know.
Right.
Somebody had to go get the wood, and somebody brought a bucket of water, and that's all you had. You know, they had, I hope if you can zap some of this, because I don't think you want this.
Okay.
But they had the little boys and little girls' room at the way at the back, at the garage doors. Now, let me tell you, there were some good bladders in that school because no one wanted to go out there in the wintertime.
I can imagine.
Put your stuff
and then, so obviously someone would have to do the shoveling around to get to the,
yeah.
keep the doors open,
yeah.
too.
And they depended on the boys, but we didn't do a very good job. But anyway, we, little boys, do you have any boys?
No. But I've grown up around them, so.
Well, you know little boys.
Yes.
They're sometimes not as careful as they should be. And the superintendent of the schools announced that he was coming. Well, the teacher was aware that he was coming. So she wanted, of course, everything just spick and span. And everybody at the meeting. And a one-room schoolhouse is a great thing for students such as I was, who really wasn't a good student at all, because I could listen to things when I was supposed to be doing something else. I could listen to another class doing something that sounded good to me. Anyway, she wanted everybody to know their lessons. So the superintendent appeared and he looked around and he said, oh, that's great. Oh, he has many children. That's true. So he went around to inspect the toilets. He came back in and he had a word with the teacher. And she said, class, we're going to have an extra recess. But the boys stay here. And the girls all got their clothes on and went out. This was in the middle of the winter. He just harangued us for we've got to put this up. Pure ice out there.
Oh no. Yellow ice.
He never came again in the winter. I can tell you that. Some of the things were just plain fun.
Right.
One sheep run, you know, and all that sort of thing. That was great because my family were fishermen and hunters and all that sort of thing, so I knew about that. So I was a great type of trip. Couldn't hide, you know, you'd see a trail going out through the snow, and you'd hear in the back of that bush or that tree or that rock or whatever. I could always fight them.
So were you a good fisherman?
Yes, I did, and I kept it up for a long, long time.
There were no limits back then, were there? You could catch as many fish as you wanted.
I just don't remember.
Right.
But there were limits. There were limits on some things. But I forgot what they were.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great time. I used to, we were extremely poor. These people today say, you know, they're burdened and all that. They don't know what they're talking about. I can remember week after week after week going hunting with my uncles. And I have two shotgun shells, and that's all.
Oh,
and
my.
We didn't waste them.
Right.
We just didn't waste them.
So did you go in? Like, did you do a lot of, like, burying or in your garden?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh yes, I always had a garden, and we used to go berrying. And another thing that was fun, my grandfather was very patriotic. His father was in the Civil War, and shot in Antietam, but survived. And then one of his uncles died in Louisiana. In the siege they were on the siege of Fredericksburg, and then they went, not Fredericksburg, what did I say? Well, on the Mississippi anyway, and he came back to New Orleans and died there, and buried there, Veterans Cemetery there. So, but he's very patriotic. So every year for Memorial Day, we all go up on Maplewood Hill, on the hillside, and we pick out the evergreen, the brown cover, you know.
Oh, yeah.
From it. And then my grandfather would take some wire and make the ring, and then we'd attach the evergreen, you know, and then we'd take them to the cemetery and whatnot.
Oh,
and the school, the Knowledge Branch classes, you know, and we'd have lunch at the town hall. They always had the same thing. They had ham salad, ground up, you know, and sandwiches. And Dixie cups, not Dixie cups, but the flat kind, three colors.
The ice cream in them?
Yes. Yeah, three colors, yes. Chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. The
little spoon, yes.
Hood put them out.
Yeah.
Hoodies were around.
Right. They were Dixie cups, I think, right?
Yeah. Well,
they were like that, right.
Yeah, but these were flat.
Right.
So everybody got one of those. Let me tell you. Do you remember Jack Campbell? No. It was Parker's drug at that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, in the wintertime, they'd get an order of ice cream. Otherwise, you'd get no ice cream.
Thank you.
But Jack Campbell ran that drugstore for a long, long time. The first policeman I remember in town was Jimmy Carr. I didn't call him Jimmy, of course.
Yeah.
Anyway. But I'd get angry at my grandmother, and I'd say, I'm going to run away from home. And so I'd go out, and she'd beg and beg and beg, and I think she used to cheer off too. But anyway, mean little kid. And I kept going more and more and more down there. And finally, I'd get down. You know where Ness's stable used to be? Corner of Cross Street Magazine. I get down that far, and she couldn't make herself heard anymore, you know. And so eventually they'd say, well, okay. Well, she would really go in the house and call Chief of Police, Jimmy Carr. So he'd be standing in front of Jackson's store. I'd go down and see. First, I'd just get it. Once in a while, I'd go back. But I got, getting away with it all the time. So he'd say, what's your name? I said, Sonny Ramsey. He said, where do you think you're going? I said, I'm running away from home. He said, are your grandmother at home? I said, no, not to a granny house for him. He said, well, I may have to put you in jail. He said, you're not allowed to run away. He said, you come along with me, we'll talk it over. For the first couple of times, I was scared to death, except we didn't head for the town hall. He was at the drugstore. He'd buy me an ice cream cone. And we'd talk it over there. He said, now you go home and tell your grandmother you're sorry.
Oh, yes. Isn't that great?
Running away from home with Jimmy Carr, the chief police. Oh, that's good stuff. yeah, great times. But,
so you run away, end up with the chief of police having ice cream.
Then go home from there.
Did you ever get in trouble?
Well, not serious.
No. Okay.
But I was always in trouble. My grandparents were just loving, caring people. But I was no discipline whatsoever. I can remember about twice while I was growing up that they were cross with me. Once when I didn't come home for lunch, when I knew I should, I could hear them calling me and I still didn't come. And he got me really cross then. And one other time, I became uncomfortable with what was going on and said some things I shouldn't have said. But he got cross with me again. My grandmother was disappointed. But never.
Nothing bad. No. You weren't like a prankster or a ruffian or...
Not a ruffian. I wasn't big enough for that. No. But I did a lot of things I shouldn't have done, of course.
Yeah, you were just a typical boy.
But we had a good guy.
Now, when you went to high school, when you started going up to the high school, any memories about that? I'm sure you must have a lot.
Yes, the teacher. churches were uncommonly kind because I was a very, very poor student. And I was cutting up in class all the time. All the time. And it just, I didn't put up with it for 2 minutes.
But in all the patients?
Well, and I think the circumstances might have had something to do with it. I remember Leslie Cummings was principal during much of the time. And I was in his office sometimes once a week. And he just talked with me. And he should have kicked me out. But I think because of my grandparents, if my father had been here, or a real tough guy, I'm sure they would have said, "Now you straighten that boy out." But they wouldn't do that. They had all the problems.
But did you do any? Were you any activities at school? Sports or?
I was never very good at sports. Baseball. I was a good catch, no hit. Basketball. Good shooter, but I couldn't get to the basket. I was too short, or I wasn't fast enough, or whatever. Plus the fact that we were 2.5 miles out. No way of getting home except one. That's walk. And sometimes it was snow, or wind, or rain, or whatever. And it just wasn't fun. And part of the fun of being in a team was to be with your teammates, And the other guys could come downtown and you have a Coke on the way home or whatever, Coke wasn't a big thing back in those days, but whatever, And, but I would, I'd hike down through the woods, about the only thing that I participated in was the school plays. Another boy from Bethany, he was from Bethany Junction, Raymond Durante, part of a pretty good sized family. We used to do skits and sing in between the acts of the plays, And we did that all the time. As a matter of fact, we did that so much. This would be when I was probably midway through high school. And we did this so much that we used to do this for pay, I remember one time we did one of these little things, sing some songs and get some material on perhaps the boss or some of the players. I mean, some of the workers who were known for different things, And we get some information, make little jokes about that, and sing some songs. And then Ray played the guitar, so we do this type of thing. We have a lot of fun. And we used to go during those times. Amateur night at the theater, big thing, all over. And Ray and I would go, and neither one of us had a car. And a man by the name of Charles Whittier, who used to live here. Finally ended up living in Littleton, and his wife still lives there. But anyway, when we first knew him, he was in the CC camp thing, they had one at Gale River, I guess it was. And he knew how they would do rope tricks, like, the lasso type thing, and he'd dance on that, over his head, and all that sort of thing. And he'd tell little Western stories. I don't think he was from the West or something, but he did that. So we'd always ride with him, but he'd like us to go with him, because some nights he would be hard to show up, He always won with that rope stuff, And we'd say, you're just having us come in case you get stuck, so you don't push the car up. Oh, yeah, I had a great time. So we did that. We did that for a long time, as a matter of fact, after the meeting sometimes.
Now, when you say he won, would he win anything?
Big time.
Would he win something?
Oh, yeah. You'd win sometimes it would be like a gift certificate from the store or something like that. They put up this in order to get enough money so that people would show up. Right. You know, so
Would you do this in Littleton?
Yes.
At the town?
Yes. At town hall.
Oh, at the town hall. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And I remember one time we had it wasn't a very big crowd, and there weren't very many people. And Ray and I were doing a challenge there that night. We won that night too, but anyway, a couple of people were playing the piano. Started moving the piano all over the stage, you know, and we are out there. Couldn't very well turn around and look, but there was one stupid little peek, yeah. The piano was going out back. But the things that happened during that era are just fantastic. I don't remember specifically the trains coming into town, but the history books say that at one point, you know, there were like 12 trains a day coming into Bethlehem, by heaven's sakes. And but when I was living in the hall, the train track was not too far away, you could see it go by. And every Sunday night, the train to New York City would go by. And the husbands had been up for like a week or maybe just for the weekend. They come up on the train. And they were on their way back, so they were in the sleeper. And they wake up the next morning in New York, go to work. I remember seeing that.
Now, did you ever have a job when you were in school?
Oh, yeah. I used to work at Jackson's store.
Oh, did you?
And
what did you do there?
Well, I do stocking, and I liked that job because Jackson's had the only penny candy case in North Country, as far as I know. So whenever I was going by, Mr. Jackson would say, "Now, son, you go by, just take one piece now." And sometimes whatever chore I was doing would have me go by there about every 5 minutes. and I forgot his name, but the butcher. But in those days, you had to cut up your own salami and all that sort of stuff, you know. And ordinarily, they would cut it up in advance. So when I went by, he'd say, "Oh, sorry, wait just a minute," he said. "Can you help me out?" He said, "I was cutting up this salami," and he said, there's a slice that I can't sell." He says, look at that. And he'd give it to him, you know. My grandfather one day just happened to be in there when I was younger. And this one, nurses was. M-O-U-R-S, I think it may have done. College Street, maybe? Anyway. He saw me do this. He called me as I went by and he said, "Oh," he said, "I got a piece left over." He said, "They only wanted exactly half a pound." He said, "Here's a piece left over." He said, "Would you eat that for me?" And I said, my grandfather saw me go by and he said, "You're full of baloney. That's what you are." But in the sort of late summer, people would start ordering their coal for the winter, for heating purposes. And a man named Callender worked for Mr. Jackson. And they had a dump truck with a great big high body on it. And they fill that up with coal at the railroad. And then, if you could, you'd put a shovel on a tray down from there, and it would have to go in the cellar window, you know. And it could let some of it out. But then eventually you had the shovel, a little coal shovel, weren't made for a fellow like me. I don't know, I probably weighed about 85 pounds. And Mr. Callahan was a big man. But anyway, we'd do that, and I would do it. Sometimes you couldn't get a train. You'd down there at all, so you'd have to throw it in there. And I could throw it all right, but I couldn't always hit the window. And he'd say, Sonny, he said, remember, anything that doesn't go down in the cellar, you're going to have to pick that up and throw it down. That's it. And every once in a while, he'd stop and laugh and say, you're supposed to hit the window.
Not
all of them, but I think most of them were about $3 a day, which was man's wages in those days. And my grandfather was, he gave me good advice several times, but I always ignored him, but he told me one time, I'd been offered a job, and I said, they'll only pay me $15 a week. And he said, take it. And I said, but the other fellows are working on the road, tarring the roads in those days. You know, they had the tar truck go down, and then you had the little piles of sand along the road, and you'd have to shovel that sand and sweep it. Truck and go around to the, all the boarding houses, and we'd pull into the yard, and she'd say, "Sonny, you watch out, they don't pitch." Because, of course, they don't. And the poor people, they would have a hay fever, and they'd be staying families in a room.
Yeah.
How could afford it? You know, and the husband would be in the city working, and they would be up here, and I've seen them come out and buy one egg. Just hand them out, you know, really. And Mrs. Hikens was always nice to her. She had some fruit boots. Little bad, you know, she'd say, "Save that for so and so." But I was driving her around town, you know. And I had $15 for that too, I think. So I could have all the food I wanted. But I couldn't stay within the rules, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a liking for Honeydale melons, you know. And they were expensive in those days, just as they are today. Well, more so than cantaloupes. Mr. Hikers would come out and say to his wife, "Hey." He'd say, "Oh, you sold a lot of Honeydale, mister." She'd say, "Oh." He said, well, we had some that had spots, and Sonny ate them. You glare at me, you know, and say, why don't you eat something else?" And I go there. Sometimes we have a little rain, just spring. So she'd say, "Sonny, you mind? Well, there's a cab over the front window." I said, "No, I don't mind. So she said, "Don't you get wet?" And I said, "Oh, I don't mind." She'd take a bag, paper bag, and she'd fold up this, and she'd put it on over here. And I'd go by, my friend said, "What is she?" Oh, she embarrassed me so much. I didn't want to go out in this room.
Your melons that you used to eat, can you remember what she would sell those for?
No. No, I don't. No. They were high bell, but I'm sure they were pretty expensive in a lot of them. But I don't enjoy anything with people face to face, you know. And I no question about it, I was too open to it. I'm still that way. I worked for Cushman Bakery. Did you ever hear of them? I think they're out of business now. But anyway, the man who supplied this area came from Lancaster, I think, from Whitefield. And he brought bread for our house. So eventually he said, "How would you like to ride along with me?" So I did. And he paid me about $2 a day, I think. Maybe three, I don't know. But anyway, I'd only do that with him on Saturdays. This would be during school year. And he picked up his load very, very early in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes we would get home until 10 o'clock at night.
Because
we'd end up in Lincoln. He liked having me along to the apartment houses, you know.
All right.
Yeah. And he'd tell me, "Okay, just take the bread. They won't take anything else." Well, sometimes I'd fool him, you know, and he'd say, "Did you sell them cake? Because they were expensive. Those things would be over $1. And it was a lot of money. And eventually, I knew that he was just sending me on the trips. And so I would develop a sore foot or something. And So then one day he said, I'll tell you what, he said, you want to work next Saturday? I said, sure. He said, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you 10% of everything you sell. So I said, well, that sounds good to me. So I did it the next week, and I made $3. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to start selling here. And my age was just right, and besides that, I'm small. So I would go into the houses, I really weren't expecting it. I'd be going up the thing, I'd wrap on the door, and I'd say, I'll be right back, Christmas. I said, don't want anything. I said, I've got a special. And I'd go back down, and I'd open the door, and I'd say, we don't want any. I said, listen, did you know that you could get this nice chocolate cake from? And he said, I can't afford that. I said, well, and I'd sell this stuff. So I was really selling last night. And one Saturday, I earned $10.
Oh,
and he said, that's the end of that. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I can't afford to pay you $10. I said, why can't you? I sold that much of my stuff. I said, I've developed these bread orders of yours. He said, I tried them on Tuesday. Like, you go to the same place on Tuesday, you do Saturday, whatever it was. They're scheduled twice a week. He said, I can't sell anything to him. He said, You're building up a business that I can't maintain. I said, well, no, it's up to you. And he said, no. He said, I'll pay you $3. I said, no, I'll let you know. And that was our finish.
Oh,
but we had a great day one time. We were going down through the notch, and we were coming into Plutonum. And it was snowing, and the roads had quite a bit of snow. And the entire hill was filled with cars. And so we sat there and grumbled, and he said, well, you're going to be home late tonight. Because Lincoln was a good place for it. And Saturday, people were all their pain, and you buy things that they wouldn't ordinarily get. So somebody came up to the window and said, hey, have you got anything to eat in there? I said, sure, we've got peanut butter, and they sold quite a few things. And they even sold baked beans. But they were selling baked beans. But anyway, somebody watched somebody go away and came back and said, how about donuts? Yeah, we have donuts. So he said, hey, you put this in the deal here. So we had these big baskets we were pulling around. So we filled it up with like cupcakes and things like that. And we went half a mile up the road, and we're selling some right, left, back. He said, my God, you won't get anything when I get to Lincoln. So you're all here in the road. And things are happening.
Those snowstorms, though, of course, you get much more snow back there.
Oh, yeah.
But do you ever remember having snow days before?
No. We must have. I don't remember. I remember in Bethlehem Hollow, we had RSD for Pikefield.
Oh.
Bethlehem didn't have an RSD driver. We had Mr. French was our driver. And in the summertime, he had a touring car. But in the winter, we'd have when it was real bad, or even, when you have a wagon with a cover. And in the real blizzardy times, when it was snowing a lot, you'd have a sleigh with a front to it, with glass. Well, it was glass. I suppose it was isinglass or whatever. And a hole where it could rain. I had to come through there. I remember that we're going through there. And see Mr. French coming very popular. And he'd yell and he'd say, Sonny, you've got to shovel this closer to the mailbox. We had great times. About from where we live at the home. About a mile from where we live at home, there's a road that went up the hill to the right, and about halfway up the hill, a Dr. Cable lived. And one of his daughters, I think, is still living in town, Barbara. I think she married Newcomb. Anyway, but he was a foot surgeon, podiatrist, well known, and worked in New York City. So the family would come up there in the summertime, and when I first knew them, they had two big packing cars. One was a touring car. I forgot what they call it, but. Wings coming out the side, you know, with glass on the side. I can't think of anything like that. But anyway, they would get the neighborhood children and bring us to Duffy for the movies. And then we'd go to maybe Parker's Drug or something for an ice cream cone after, or an ice cream soda afterwards, and bring us all home. And every Halloween, we'd have a big party there for all the children from miles around. Costumes, but they'd have like the bobbing for apples, you know. And they always put a coin in the apple, a little slice in the coin. And the boys would try to figure out, you know, they'd say, "Watch how the apple is in the water." And if it hangs a little bit lower in the water than one next to it, maybe has a bigger coin. And I think it worked for a while, but it caught on, of course, for what we were doing. There was a family that lived on top of the hill. It was a big family. Keeley and other names up there too. And two or three of the children went to school here. I forgot their name. Jerry was one of them. A little girl, she was about 2 years. She was younger, I guess, than I was. But anyway, they're awesome. Then Pat Taylor, the oldest daughter, worked as the cashier at the theater. And she had a convertible, all by another packer. And they had a chauffeur. Mrs. Gaylor, good times.
Now, did you have any girlfriend when you were in school? Any girls you used to pull their pigtails or anything?
I don't remember the pigtails. No, I was in the hall during that pig time. But they closed that school, and I came back here, and we were bused, of course. Seventh grade, whatever the new school was done. And yes, I liked a lot of girls. Once in a great while, I liked one who liked me back. But most of the time, I just watched them and liked them. Lack of spending money is sometimes a hindrance. So if you ask a girl to have a Coke with you, you gotta be able to pay for the Coke, you know. Some of the boys, he lived in she gets so angry when she sees the book.
So Main Street's really looks a lot different than I'm sure.
Even though my memories of that definitely are poor times, no one has memories. I used to think when you were growing up, you always said, "Oh, I want to be." I didn't know what I wanted to be, but I knew a couple of things I wanted to be. I wanted to learn to fly, and I eventually did. But the story is too long and blurry for this. But I eventually did learn to fly. But anyway, it caused me to go into service, which was a good thing, because I got some discipline right away, and I had a lot of fun, pretty exciting. But anyway, during that period, the town was dying, but slowly, and you were used to it, so you didn't see these things. Had I been in business, I would have known. But anyway, every once in a while, we watch Paulus and talk to him. He said, "What do you want to do?" Everybody said, "Go, we get out of here." And he said, "What are you going to do if you stay?" And I'd forgotten who it was, but we all knew a man living here who made a salary. $200 a month. And we all said, if you let me stay.
Isn't that something? Yeah. That was just so much money back then.
Yeah. And just think of it.
Wow.
You couldn't think of a job that you could possibly get that would pay that. And if that was your goal, there's no sense sticking what you had to, you know? But my years in service, when I come back, and each time I came back, I'd see less. And I used to say, "Oh, too bad, the town's dying, you know." And then when things did improve, very slow. When I get out of service in 45, I came back to New Hampshire, just because Dad didn't tend to stay. But I came back and I don't know, something happened that made me want to stay. And I had married at that point and had one child. And I was in Concord. And my father had remarried. He was living in Concord at that time. I guess that's why I was there. But anyway, I started looking around, and my stepmother kept telling me, "You can do a good job here." And as a matter of fact, I was offered there, but he was going to make a good job with the Blue Cross, which was just starting. But I said, "My Lord, if you went from here to there," he said, "Well, what do you pay?" "They're paying $25 a week."
Wow.
Well, I went to work in a men's store in Concord. $25 a week. And I obviously didn't keep it very long. But I did benefit from it because I did clothing for half off. And when I came off the service, I probably had one suit.
So I got out.
I think at one time Jackson's store sold more things, maybe overalls. Might have been a Mackinac too, or I don't remember. And I used to go to the Grange. Square dancing after the meeting. I didn't belong, so I couldn't go to the meeting. So I'd sit around outside and wait for another. And yeah, great time. Even in those days, well, maybe even in those days, but more women than men belonged. So we'd get these square dances going. And I'd be out there falling to some little gal, you know, like 60 years old now. I was 17. Oh, great.